A recent study by scientists at the University of Texas School of Public Health discovered fire-retardant chemicals in common foods purchased in Dallas supermarkets, foods like meat, fish, and peanut butter. But according to industrial hygienist Monona Russell, these chemicals are not just in our food. They're emitted by the plastics in our cars, computers, TVs, furniture, clothing, and carpets, fluorescent light ballasts, paints, floor tiles, and many other household items, and they're also now in our bodies. Monona visits us from time to time to talk about environmental health issues, and today she's here to tell us how this happened and what we might be able to do about it. Hi, it's good to see you again, although you always bring doom and gloom. I go home and I quiver for a while after we have these conversations.
I wish everybody would quiver enough to do something, because we really need to get after this.
So let's begin at the beginning. What are fire retardants or flame retardants, and how do they retard fire?
Well, there's a lot of different types, and there is one type that is not terribly toxic, and these are the inorganic ones, things like certain ammonia compounds, some phosphorus compounds, some metal-type compounds based on magnesium and other things that aren't very toxic. A few of them are toxic because they rely on chemicals like antimony, which is no day at the beach either. But there's some of those that will work and will do a job on a lot of things. However, they're very limited. They're like adding sand to the mixture. They don't mix into plastics and fabrics and materials well, so they're limited in what they can do.
So what are the bad guys here?
Well, the very first one was the polychlorinated biphenyls. Those were the PCBs. They were discovered in the 1800s. They were in full production by 1914. By the 30s, Monsanto had, taken them over. By the 50s, they were in everything. There was just nothing they weren't in.
And we felt that they were good if they were in children's pajamas, for example.
Well, yes. We didn't have rules for children's pajamas in 1930, though. But we did have rules about other types of things. For instance, light ballasts couldn't catch fire. You had to find a chemical that would prevent that from occurring and yet would pass that heat and electricity safely through the equipment. And they would be in plastics, because plastics and paints, which were now then made of plastics, would catch fire easily. And the PCBs were miracle chemicals, because they not only were fire retardants, they were plasticizers and preservatives. So they got three things in one. Now, in the 30s, they already knew they were toxic, and they already knew there were real problems with animals and with people. But everybody just kept on making them until they were finally banned. And then all they did was take the chlorines off of the PCBs and put bromines in their place. And the two chemicals, chlorine and bromine, stop fires. They interrupt that fire reaction. That's why even the fire extinguishers contain things like halon, which were chlorinated hydrocarbons.
And those are just as dangerous?
Yeah.
Well, right. Let's go back to PCBs.
Okay.
Were they aware from the start that they were being absorbed into our bodies and stored there?
Well, they didn't completely understand all of that, but by the birds collected from 1914 on in museum collections show PCBs already in their feathers. So we know that people were aware, and people who were testing were aware that they were getting into the animals. Were they testing themselves for them? Probably not.
Were they thinking that this is a trade-off in trying to prevent fires, which can kill people? We were perhaps exposing them to health problems.
Yeah, and that was industry's argument. Do you want to burn up, or do you want to risk possibly, maybe, some toxic problem down the line that isn't really even proven? So that was kind of their position on that, until the evidence got stronger and stronger and stronger.
So that 30 years ago, we banned PCBs.
Right.
And then we, as you say, we wound up using a thing called hexabromocyclodecarbazole dodecane.
Well, that's a little later, actually. Oh. That's a slightly different chemical. But the PCB exact structure, they just took off the chlorines and put bromines on. Those were the brominated biphenyls. Now, they got into the food chain in Michigan, and people got the same diseases that they got from the PCBs immediately. So they knew that that wasn't good. So then they stuck an oxygen in it, and those are the polybrominated biphenyl ethers that are now in everybody's blood. Everybody's carrying that group.
Can you talk about the University of Texas study in which foods in this Dallas supermarket, or a whole bunch of supermarkets, I guess, were found to contain fire retardants?
Yes, and that's very interesting. If you just plain read it and read the comments about it, it literally shows you the whole issue. Instead of having two benzene rings like the polybrominated biphenyl ethers, this chemical that they're talking about is 12 carbons holding hands with 6 bromines on it. And that particular chemical is now known to cause these toxic effects. It's fairly newish compared to the ones I'm talking about. And it should be absolutely no surprise to anyone that it's in our food, because it's in us, and it's in all of the extruded and expanded polystyrenes. That's its major use. So everything that's made with polystyrene for sure contains it, and some of the other plastics do too.
So when I buy meat at the supermarket that's in this polystyrene dish, has a little piece of paper between it and the meat, I'm getting HBCD extruded
into my
meat?
Well, you may get some from that, a small amount. But the really biggest part probably comes from you. Because, you see, it's in people now. Our waste is then processed into sludge. The sludge is used to feed the vegetables.
So we've created this cycle.
And this is why anything that is persistent, that means it doesn't break down in us or in the environment, toxic and bioaccumulative, which means it accumulates in the environment, is going to end up in everything. Absolutely everything. And that's what's happened with PCBs, with DDT, with all of these other complex chlorinated and brominated hydrocarbons.
Well, since it's in us and we are contaminating ourselves, can you regulate that?
Well, of course you can regulate anything, but no one has the will.
Well, how would you regulate me contaminating my own environment?
You can't. That you can't do. But what we can do is stop it at its source. What we need to do is actually ask industry to test the chemicals before they put them in the products. That would be a really interesting step. But it's never been done.
Well, the study from the University of Texas says that, I'm quoting, health concerns of HBCD exposure include potential alterations in immune and reproductive systems, neurotoxic effects in children, and endocrine disruption. Are these the same kinds of health problems that are caused by other chemicals containing chlorine and bromine?
Well, some of the ones that we're talking about, yes. Not all chlorine and bromine compounds do that, but these do. And the reason that they're talking about those particular things is because there are short-term EPA tests on water fleas and tests on itty-bitty fish, and some cell tests in petri dishes, those kind of quick tests that will tell, oh, this is an endocrine disruptor. Oh, this is likely to have reproductive hazards because the little fleas don't do well when the next generation. But when we see that...
I don't mind getting rid of fleas, by the way.
These are water fleas. They're nice. They don't bite. But you really... When we see that, we should know it's persistent, toxic, and bioaccumulative, we're going to be dealing with it. So the next step is the actual animal tests. Now, industry is going to say, well, what is this? Fleas? What are we talking about here? So they say, why should we lose our economic position and all the money we've invested in this chemical and all of this stuff when there's no proof? And what we have to say to industry is the reason there's no proof is you haven't studied it.
Manona Russell is talking about the dangers of fire retardants, and she'll explain why banning one chemical at a time doesn't work and what we should be doing instead as we continue our conversation. By the way, we also invite your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a question or a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Didn't the tobacco industry insist on fire-retardant furniture instead of cigarettes that would extinguish automatically?
Yeah. That was one of their strategies, because one of the reasons for banning cigarettes in had to do with the large number of fires and deaths that were attributable to cigarettes. They said, well, that's the fault of the manufacturers of the furniture and rugs and so on. So there are fire retardants in everything. And I'm not against fire retarding fabrics and things, because I was also one of the witnesses in the Rhode Island fire, which essentially 100 people died because there was no fire retardant in the foam plastic that was used on the band shell.
You're just saying that we could have used better fire retardants. Why do we use the ones that are more dangerous? Is it because they're cheaper?
They're cheap not because just the manufacturing is cheap, but cheap because they will do at least three things instead of one. If you have to do three chemicals to get where you would get with one chemical, that's much more expensive, and they're extremely good at what they do.
Now, whenever we talk about these things, we talk about them as carcinogenic, but haven't these things also been connected to diabetes?
Yes. Yeah, we've seen that in a number of odd studies now, that we're beginning to think that weight gain and a number of things are also tied to some of these things. They change the way our endocrine system works.
And we mentioned that they're found mostly in fish and meat, but what about other things like dairy products, grains,
absolutely,
fruits, vegetables?
It's going to be everywhere. It's just only a matter of time.
And if something is labeled organic, would that be more of a protection?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. Well, as long as they don't use any of the sludge from waste, they may be less. But, you know, it's so ubiquitous that you just because it's organic, you just can't completely relax on this.
In addition to ingesting them in food, might we also be breathing them in?
Oh, absolutely. That's what new car smells all about.
I just got a new car. What about new carpets? And
same thing. Many, many different chemicals. And it isn't just the fire retardant. It's the plasticizers and the there's a host of weird, odd chemicals about which we know absolutely nothing that are coming off of a lot of these.
Which appear to be inert. You're saying they're not really inert.
Oh, no. In fact, the last thing you want is something that's inert, because that means it lasts forever. It doesn't react. It doesn't break down. Doesn't change.
So is that what happens when they get into our bodies, that they just stay there?
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're kind of like the plastic. Our fat cells really are good at absorbing these things, and that's where they like to hang out. And I think we've all learned through bitter experience we don't turn our fat cells over very often.
So if we lose weight, are we getting rid of some of these things?
Yes, you're decreasing your body burden by the percentage of weight you lose, and that's also why you feel so rotten when you're losing weight, is because your blood is carrying a lot of this. Now, some of that will redeposit because it's there, but you will get rid of some of it.
What about, I'm told that it's not as big a problem for people of a certain age, but if you are of childbearing age, this can be a very serious problem.
Well, that's why it bioaccumulates in people, that issue that you're talking about there, because the baby is born essentially with the same body burden as the mother. So whatever the mother is carrying of those 200, 300 chemicals that are now being monitored by the Centers for Disease Control, whatever her amounts of those are, that's about the amount that the baby is carrying by weight.
Are there blood tests that will tell us just how much we have in our blood?
Yeah, of course, they're very expensive. Now, remember, there was a PBS program a number of years ago where Bill Moyers had his blood tested when they were first looking for chemicals, and he found 83 of these in his blood. And that's typical. You know, usually you find more.
Can you remove them through things like chelation therapies?
Garbage. No, forget it. No, it just doesn't happen. I mean,
does Gary Null know that you're saying that?
Oh dear! Listen, if somebody's going to chelate you and take out all the bad stuff, just run.
So the answer is prevention, but right. you're saying that's very difficult in the world that we live in.
Yeah, because chelation has a downside. For instance, chelating used to be done routinely for lead, and they now know that it actually makes a bigger problem than leaving it in the bones. Because when you put it back into the blood, your body has another shot at the organs that it wants to damage.
Now, Carol, one of our listeners from Staten Island asks, do you recommend we remove meat from the packaging and repackage it before we put it in the refrigerator?
Actually, I think that would be going elephant hunting with a pea shooter. I don't think that little bit of time and that is going to make a significant difference.
And then we're going to be putting it into a plastic baggie anyway, aren't we?
Can't win. You can't win. It's where I fix that. I don't eat meat. You know, it just makes it really simple. But
I go to a supermarket where they wrap many of the vegetables in some kind of Saran wrap type product. I would assume that they're doing the same thing to the broccoli.
Well, you know, Mother Nature is pretty good. She makes some pretty good containers like banana skin and watermelon rind. There's a lot of foods that you don't really need to put in plastic.
Now, the European Union has been the lead on these issues. How did they treat the matter of fire retardants?
Well, they and the Stockholm Council are actually proposed in 2008 the chemical about which you read at the beginning for global ban, all of them, not just the one, but the whole class. So, I mean, they're fully aware of this. They are making moves. We are not. We're now the problem.
But California seems to have try to do things with environmental regulation, and there's a flame retardant bill that was just introduced into the New York State Senate.
Yeah. In fact, state action is about the only way to go, because getting the federal government to move, you've got to go against the industry that supports it. So, you know, it's not likely to happen. We are furthest behind. California in the United States is way ahead of the federal government in any other state. But that is not saying a whole lot, because we as a whole are so far behind other countries that the gap is incredible.
Let's take a call from Kathy from Albany. By the way, she's called us at 212-433-9692. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
You're in Albany. You know about this bill that's going through the state Senate?
Yes. I'm from Clean and Healthy New York, and we're advocating for the passage of Senate Bill number 6080. It's already passed the Assembly unanimously, and it's already passed through Senate Environmental Conservation Committee unanimously. And the Senate Majority Leader, Skelos, appears to be the one blockade between it and the Senate floor. And we are confident if it got there, it would also pass overwhelmingly. And it would remove one of these toxic flame retardants from polyurethane foam in products made for children age 3 and under.
Now, Monona, you've said that that's inadequate. It's just not
absolutely
enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. You need to go after the class. And in fact, there were two in the bill, and they took one out. And it's the more prevalent one. So you fight and you fight and you get one chemical ban, and industry has hundreds, thousands to replace it with. And the real issue is that wasting our time banning chemicals one at a time makes industry very happy, because they have 19 million in their catalogs now. There's no end to the number of chemicals in each one of the fire retardant classes that they can replace them with, that there's no data on. And by the time you get the data, now 10, 15, 20 years has passed, and you've got that one in your blood. So we need to all work together on one thing, and that is testing prior to putting these things, or at least getting the high-volume production chemicals all tested, as REACH in Europe is trying to do.
My guest is industrial hygienist Monona Russell, who visits us on a semi-regular basis to talk about the dangers that we're creating for ourselves in our environment. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. When we come back from the break, we will talk about some safer alternatives. And a reminder that we're reading Chad Harbach's novel, The Art of Fielding, for this month's installment of the Leonard LoPage Show Book Club. Chad will be here on Thursday, June 28th, but you can share your thoughts on the best-selling novel now by going to our show page. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, the best cancer care anywhere, where prostate cancer specialists collaborate to offer personalized treatment plans designed to stop the cancer, optimize quality of life, and avoid unnecessary treatment. More at mskcc.org. Germany Trade and Invest and the German-American Chambers of Commerce, connecting business communities across the Atlantic in Germany and the U.S. for more than 60 years. Offering transatlantic business news, facts, and statistics online at transatlanticnews.info. FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, helping account holders maximize their charitable dollars while meeting their philanthropic goals. More information about FJC is available at 888-GIVE-FJC.
One of the best parts of being retired is I get to be a WNYC junkie. Are you kidding?
WNYC Listener's Legacy Circle member, Janet Mardfin.
WNYC is a community, and I'm part of it. And being a Legacy Circle member, it's a way of leaving a mark on New York City, which is my home.
Find out how to name WNYC in your estate plan. Call 646-829-4587 or email legacygiving@WNYC.org.
Today on Fresh Air, Terry Gross talks with writer Larry Tye about his new book, Superman, a biography of the character and his creators. That's coming up this afternoon at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC. And we are back with Manona Russell talking about fire retardants and how they got into our bloodstreams. Invite your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can also make a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. A listener wonders if we should be looking at this on two fronts, how to avoid exposure and what to replace these chemicals with.
Yeah, I think those are good common sense approaches. If we look at what we should replace them with first, I mentioned some of the inorganics, and in some cases those could be used, but we now have so much good chemical engineering that we really need to approach this also from the point of view of figuring out what we can make that contains chlorine, bromine, or some of these things that will retard fires, but has something built in so that the molecule itself will be capable of being broken down. So we need to really put some high-tech research onto this problem. Right now, they say there's nothing that they can replace them with, but they aren't looking in that way. They are just looking at them. Plus, there's a number of chemicals that haven't really been tested. Maybe there are some safe ones in the thousands and thousands of possibilities.
Josh in Manhattan writes, I'm a former forest firefighter and was regularly exposed to fire retardants. Should I get tested for something in particular?
Isn't that nice? Because most of those are the inorganics. Yeah, those are the phosphorus and the magnesium compounds that are coming out of there in the big red thing, you know. It's just that they drop down on the fire. It's usually not those chlorinated ones.
So he is less likely to be endangered.
Yes, but he's endangered from the smoke itself.
Mm-hmm. Another listener asks, where is this? Jennifer says, if there's any sense of whether the chemicals in our blood might have some link to autism.
Yeah, there's a lot of people thinking that's a possibility, but they're also thinking about a lot of household chemicals. There's so many possibilities, and there's so many other issues like the combination of stuff that we're exposed to and what the child is exposed to in the womb that can affect brain development later. This is a highly complex problem.
Joel in Westchester asks, is anything being done about the preservative benzoate of soda?
No, that's...
Does that even apply here?
That's a little different. That's mostly in food as a preservative.
Another listener wants to know whether these retardants are in our mattresses.
Oh, yeah. Sure, because we got foam mattresses. So whether it's urethane or whether it's one of the other polymers, there's going to be fire retardants in that for sure. There's a law. You see, the people who developed those laws were good people. They just didn't want people burning up the way they were. So there's nothing wrong with that. But they didn't say, well, here's how you're going to do that. They just let industry figure out how they were going to do that.
Let's take some more calls. Julianne from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I missed the first part. I have a couch, and whenever I lay on it, I start scratching. And so I always put like a sheet over me. So is that a reaction to a fire retardant?
Not likely. These things are not sensitizers as a rule. It's usually the things that you look for with allergy is look for to Mother Nature first, because things like mold and pet dander and organic things that come from plants and animals, that's the primary source of sensitizers. There are a few chemical sensitizers, certain sulfur compounds and a number of things, but it's not likely to be the fire retardant at all.
Thank you for your call. Cecil from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Leonard, and thank you to your guest, Winona. I was raising the issue that the NAACP has opposed the ban on these flame retardants on the basis that low-income communities and communities of color need to have greater fire protection, because there have been some CDC reports that say that, you know, they have disproportionately high levels of burn victims. But I want to just let people in the community. I live in Harlem, and I want to let people know that that's actually not the reason that we have disproportionately high levels of burn victims. One of the key things is the closing of fire stations. Sometimes it's also about the inoperability of fire hydrants, and those are the things that need to be focused on, because these toxic chemicals in the flame retardants actually do create greater risk of damaging people's lungs when they get caught in a fire. So I just wanted to raise that and let people in communities like Harlem and Washington Heights around the state know that's why it's important to call their senators and ask them to vote for S-6080.
You are absolutely right. I mean, your analysis of the issue is also excellent. And you could add to your analysis the fact that it also is likely to be affecting the health, the general health and well-being of the children, so that you don't really want these chemicals in your life. And you're right, when they interrupt a fire, they are also kicking out all of this bromine and chlorine stuff in the smoke.
Let's go to Elizabeth from Mineola. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to know if she thinks that the Proposition 65 law that California has, that right to know law, is it effective, and why don't we have it in other states like New York?
Well, there were a number of other states that proposed similar laws, and industry mounted massive campaigns at the time to make sure that never happened again, because Proposition 65 is the only law in the country that works. And it works because it has a citizen enforcement clause. In other words, you and I could get together and we could test products, and if some of them contain one of the Prop 65 chemicals and it's not labeled as containing it, you know, Prop 65 doesn't ban, it makes you label them, then we can give that information to the Attorney General and we get part of this huge settlement. Or if the Attorney General's too busy, we can hire a lawyer and do the suit ourselves against the manufacturer and get a big chunk of money. So this law enforces itself. And so if people really say that they want small government, the template is there. We can have enforcement without government. Just turn it back to the people, and then the activists and roving bands of lawyers will enforce the law. And that's exactly what happens with Proposition 65. It's highly enforced. But it isn't going to help.
Is it working in California?
It works all over the country, because if you are a national company and you want to sell in California, if you haven't got some mechanism to make sure no Californian buys your stuff, you've got to meet Proposition 65.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Marion, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I got a quick question for you. A friend of mine, his wife is pregnant, and he offhandedly said that he was going to replace an old rug with a new rug. I know my daughter is thinking about having a child. How, instead of rugs, how about hardwood floors? Would that be a better alternative for a new baby?
Well, yeah, if you don't drop the baby on the floor, I guess. I mean, you want to look at all of the issues. And, you know, there's this thing that we used to use years ago. Let me see if I can remember what it was. It was, I think, called wool. You know, wool rugs really don't need all that, and they're naturally fire retarded. That's just, they just don't support flame. So there are things that you might want to consider. Some of them are a little more expensive, but you could look into something like that.
So wood and a hardwood floor, both of those are a good direction?
Yeah, wool. Wool. And, yeah, wool.
A wool rug.
Right, wool rug. That's what I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. A listener wants to know if items like computers made for sale in Europe are without these chemicals.
They're without some of them, absolutely. They have banned a number of them in those computers. Our computer can't be sold over there. And it just shows you it is possible to still have plastics. Now, are they free of all fire retardants? Absolutely not. But they have banned certain types.
A listener also wonders about reports that some of these fire retardants don't work all that well.
That's another little stunning bit of news. Some of them really don't do as good a job as they say they're going to do, but that if the company's invested in that particular chemical, they're likely to try to make it look like it works when it doesn't.
We go now to Gloria in Short Hills. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Have you heard of substances like zeolite or chlorella or activated charcoal and their role in helping to remove some of these chemicals from the body?
Well, you know, activated charcoal has been around a really long time because it absorbs certain chemicals. At least it attracts certain chemical molecules. So if you eat certain poisons, you know, they're going to sock you full of this stuff and it'll adhere so that more of it will go through your gut rather than deposit. But, you know, again, you're going elephant hunting with a pea shooter. These things really don't do much. And once they're in your fat cells, forget about it. And the chelation treatments, you know, like calcium EDTA, those things remove the chemicals, put them in your bloodstream, give them another shot at your liver, kidney, or whatever they're going after on their way out, if they go out, because they can then redeposit from your bloodstream. So they don't really do that well. The children that they've been following who were chelated in the 70s, and they've looked at now their mortality data, their health data, everything. Nothing was gained by chelating those children for lead. And it's the same with many of the other toxic substances. Once they're really there, they're pretty much like there.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Now we go to Bobby from Albany. Hi, Bobby. You're on the air.
Hi, I appreciate your taking my call, and I really am glad you're talking about this issue. I've got two young girls of my own, and I was disappointed at sort of pushing aside when I heard you earlier with the caller about S6080. This bill would get a known cancer-causing chemical out of polyurethane foam in children's products that never shows up on the label. And I definitely think it's important to take a very broad view. But in the short term, because the only standard that requires chemicals to be added is in California, if states like New York, which have a big economy, start pushing back, we could actually start having polyurethane foam manufacturers actually making foam without flame retardants. And so we wouldn't be switching from one to another, but rather actually taking on the problem of making sure that products are flame resistant, but that the foam is not being treated with chemicals, because we know that doesn't work.
Whoa, because that's some of the 100 people at the Rhode Island fire died precisely because the urethane foam was not retarded. When urethane burns, it contains nitrogen and it gives off cyanide gas. So you really got to think about what you're proposing here.
In foam and children's products, Adding chemicals to that situation doesn't prevent fires, because by the time the outside fabric has caught fire, the inside foam is going to burn no matter what. That's what fire safety experts are telling us. They've done real-life tests, and they've shown that the California regulation doesn't actually save anything in a real-life situation. So we're in a lose-lose scenario. So I'm not saying don't make polyurethane foam in some applications flame-resistant. What I'm saying is that in children's products, in our couches, adding chemicals to that foam does not actually prevent fires from starting, because the flammability concern is really with the fabric that's on the outside. This is foam that's buried inside products, and yet it's leaching known cancer-causing chemicals on Prop 65 lists into our kids' products.
Yeah, the difficulty with that is that you're talking about the difference between pounds of urethane and a film of fabric over it. Even if that burns, how much, you know, is coming from that? The issue is the foam sitting and smoldering and smoldering and then catching fire. So I'm willing to look at these studies and this data if you point them out to me, but I'm not convinced at this point that that's the best way to go.
Manona, in the moments that we have left, is it possible to find out which fire retardants are contained in items that we buy?
Almost never. It's really hard to do that. Uh-huh. I mean, they don't have to tell you.
So how do we know which ones are the safest, or don't we? We just assume that if we buy a mattress, for example, there's going to be fire retardant in it.
Yeah,
if we buy a rug that isn't wool, there's fire retardant in it.
Yeah, pretty sure.
Anything with plastic?
Right. Public. There are laws for public buildings and consumer products that require it.
Uh huh. Well, how do people get in touch with you?
ACTSNYC@cs.com.
And Manona Russell is an industrial hygienist who has been looking into all the dangerous chemicals that are out there, making our lives a little scarier than they should be in the name of forward progress. Thank you so much for coming by today to scare us once again, Manona.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, New York Times national security correspondent David Sager talks about President Obama's aggressive use of drones, cyber war, and special forces around the world. And then Alex Stone tells us about his quest to join the ranks of New York City's master magicians. Also, John Lanchester on his critically acclaimed novel, Capital, set at the height of the financial crisis. Plus, with a growing number of 20-somethings still living with their parents, Sally Kussler discusses the trends that enable today's adult essence. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julie Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. And we had help today from Keith Karn, Olivia Gentili, Alex Geller, and contributing producer Barbara Kahn. Debbie Founder was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.